The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hey, welcome to the podcast. Great show. Great show for you today. I don't even know how we're going to squeeze everything in to the podcast. We have Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly actually opened up his wallet for $25,000 or $20,000 today. Yeah, believe it or not. And getting that is like Scrooge at Christmas time, you know, and I felt like I was asking for a scuttle of coal, but he actually did it, and we'll explain why on today's podcast. Also, he had a lot to say about what's going on with the White House and the press corps. Plus, we had Dave Issay on. Dave has a way for us to come together, and he needs your help. He's looking for voices in the country that are pro-Trump, that want to help with history. And you'll hear that today. Also, I think in regards to that, we should touch a little bit on how to win friends and influence people. A way for you to actually not have a civil war at your Thanksgiving table.
The answer is intimidation and threats. The more you intimidate and threaten people, the more they do what you want.
Strangely, not the case. But also, yesterday we picked a name of somebody who could come out and spend, you know, the Saturday with us at our Mercury One gala. Her name was Jody. She won. I called her today to verify that she was coming. She told me some news, and it actually turned out to be an amazing story. We'll end the podcast with that.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. It's Friday, November 16th.
Relief Factor, a company that has changed my life. Thank you, Relief Factor. If you have a hard time sleeping, if you have a hard time moving, you have a hard time playing with the kids, you want your life back. My son asked me the other day, can we go bowling, Dad? And I was like, oh, no, please. Not bowling.
You mean the sport where you take like three steps and swing your arm?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Not.
And that's you run a triathlon, right?
Yeah, not good. Okay. So anyway, if you want your life back to be able to just move the way you used to, try Relief Factor. 100% drug-free, created by doctors, four key ingredients that help fight the body's inflammation, which causes most of the pain. Try it for 3 weeks. It's so worth it. 70% of the people who try it order it again month after month after month. I do. It works. ReliefFactor.com. Go there now. ReliefFactor.com.
Glenn Beck.
Okay. There's something that there's a new tactic being employed by the left, and it came out this weekend or this week. And if it doesn't backfire, may I use the president's word, bigly, then I think we're in serious trouble. And when I say we, I don't mean the GOP. I don't mean conservatives. I don't even mean we as a country. I think we as a species are screwed. First, it was a commercial ran by Planned Parenthood, and it used a precious-looking little baby in a lullaby, and then these words: she deserves to be loved. She deserves to be wanted. She deserves to be a choice. Wait. What? Am I the only one that's not dead inside? How evil do you have to be to see this beautiful child, to hear a lullaby, see this cooing little baby, and then try to think that this baby could have been killed and it would have been a good thing? I mean, it's just really, it's crazy. You know, if you were struggling, this baby deserves to be loved, unless it was inconvenient for mom. And then mom should have killed it. Oh, my gosh. Now, this was just the first crazy ad. The second crazy ad, I don't even know what it's about. I had to ask around, what the hell is this? Celine Dion, everybody's personal favorite. Celine Dion has just launched a new clothing line. You know, that's just what I've been waiting for. I mean, I've been hearing the clamoring all around the streets of America going, could we just get a clothing line from Celine Dion? Well, yes. She's launched her clothing line with a little mini movie style commercial. But I have to warn you, it's one of the creepiest things you'll hear. Well, I was going to say all year, but we're still 3-4 weeks away. We might hit something even more creepy by the end of the year. Listen to this.
Our children, as we are all just links in a never-ending chain that is life. For us, they are everything. But in reality,
right,
we are only a fraction of their universe.
Yes. Mom and Dad.
We miss the past.
Oh.
They
yeah.
dream of tomorrow.
Oh, that's great.
We may thrust them forward into the future.
Yeah.
But the course will always be theirs to choose.
Of course. Now, they're wrapped in pink and blue blankets, but she's about to blow out of her hand some sort of magical, well, it kind of looks like ashes. And it floats around the room of this nursery in a hospital, and all the blue and pink goes away. It all goes away. Oh, isn't that great? And then everybody's wearing black and white because our children aren't really ours. Yes, they're the focus of our lives, but we're just an insignificant little nothing to them. Celine, it doesn't make me want to buy your baby clothes. In fact, it makes me want to do the opposite. Really does. Really does. This is Marxist propaganda. Now our children are not our children. And this has been coming for a long time. Now, Celine loves this because, isn't she Canadian? Canada's been on this whole thing of, oh, you know, your children, you know, they're your children until we tell you they're not your children. Because really, they belong to all of us. You know, the great we. Oh, my gosh. By the way, does anybody know what 1984, they claim that George Orwell may have stolen this idea of 1984. 1984 is big government. It controls everybody. Everybody has a number and a name and Big Brother's watching you. But it's actually, and now that I've read the book, I think you could make a pretty strong case that it was stolen from a Russian novel in 1922. You know what the name of that Russian novel is? We. We. Have you read Anthem by Ayn Rand? Where nobody can say I or me. Each individual is we because the individual doesn't exist. You're not an individual. You're part of the collective. You're just a spoke on a giant wheel. That's all you are. And, you know, if we start to run down to too many spokes or, you know, not enough spokes, you're not really even a spoke. Because you have to be identical to everybody else, and you're just part of the collective. This, again, is Marxist propaganda. And Celine Dion is shown in this little mini movie breaking into the hospital nursery, where she delivers the line, "They have the right to choose." Oh, really? Which turns the hospital into some Orwellian, you know, black and white room, removes all of the pink and blue, and changes all the boy-girl, symbolism into, like, hospital crosses that are just black. Honestly, it looks like they're almost wearing prison clothes. It's beautiful. No, I love my kids so much where they just everything is black and white in their world. You know, gray. Oh, if we could get them those Nehru jackets, if we could get them the old communist, you know, like Mao jacket for the kids, wouldn't that be cute? The scariest thing about the past 7 days or so is I haven't heard any real backlash from either of these. Have you seen a backlash where a beautiful baby is used as a choice? It deserves to be loved, deserves to be wanted, and deserves to be a choice. Mom should be able to kill this beautiful baby. Are we dead inside? Are we so Marxist now? Has the cultural Marxist movement washed over us so much that we're now either just dead inside from all of it? Because we just, I don't know, it's just, or are we starting to believe it? How long are we going to allow this crap? How long before we all start standing up and saying, no, our children are our children. That's my child. My child. My child is an individual. My child is not a number for the state, not part of the collective. It's my child. I have the responsibility. No government, no Marxist, no capitalist has any claim to them. And gender? You know, I really do feel for Bruce Jenner. I will call Bruce Jenner Caitlyn out of respect. I feel for him. I feel for the life that he led. I feel, my heart breaks to think the guy that was on my Wheaties box at the whole time felt like he wasn't himself. He spent his whole life hiding. That is horrible. It's just horrible. But he's still Bruce Jenner. He's still a guy. He might have changed his name, and if he wants me to call him Caitlin, I'll call you Caitlin. Because I don't want to be a part of any of your pain. But if you have to put me on the stand and say, is that a male or a female? That's a male. It's a male, period. It's Bruce Jenner. And I can understand, but I am not going to change reality. Now, if Bruce Jenner wants to become Caitlyn Jenner and wants to have surgery and everything else, he's an adult. He can do that. He can do that. You have a right to do that. But it is child abuse. Child abuse to suggest that a 10-year-old should be giving hormones. That a 10-year-old should be allowed to choose at that point. This is crazy talk. Any attempt to trivialize and to diminish life, any attempt to trivialize or diminish the family, any attempt to trivialize or diminish the individual into the basic we, any attempt to trivialize or dismiss basic science should be met head on. Now, I don't know how many people can still stomach hearing my heart will go on one more friggin' time. But please, for the sake of sanity, Celine, I'll buy a ticket to your show. I'll endure that if you will just close your mouth. Stop trying to preach Marxist propaganda. And we'll listen to your damn, oh my gosh, the boat is sinking song.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
So yesterday, this kid in junior high calls me up and he says, Glenn, I'm having a really hard time educating my friends because they don't really want to hear it. And I can be, I don't remember the word he used exactly, but it was basically, I can get heated at times.
Belligerent?
Yeah, a little belligerent. Was that the word that he used?
I don't remember, but that's, yeah.
It was probably not that strong, but it was in that neighborhood. And so he asked for advice, and the thing that came off right off the top of my head was, you need to read How to Win Friends and Influence People. Now, I haven't read this probably since I was a teenager. This is my dad. My dad was, How to Win Friends and Influence People. That's the greatest book ever written. It'll change your life. Blah, 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 blah. Last night, I reread it, and it was like having a conversation with my dad. And I realized where so much of what I believe comes from. I mean, if you really want to know who I am, or the basis of me, a cornerstone of me, it's this book. And it's amazing. It is amazing. I had forgotten how good it was. You're going to have dinner. Welcome to the program, Pat Gray. You're going to have dinner with your relatives who are absolutely on the wrong side of every argument. Here's how you have a really good Thanksgiving. I'm gonna give you the highlights. Fundamental techniques in handling people. Number one, don't criticize, condemn, or complain. Human nature does not like to admit fault. When people are criticized or humiliated, they rarely respond well. Two, give honest and sincere appreciation. Appreciation is one of the most powerful tools in the world. People will rarely work at their maximum potential under criticism. Three, arouse in the other person an eager want. To get what we want from another person, we must forget our own perspective and begin to see things from other people's perspectives. Six ways to make people like you more. Be genuinely interested in other people. Two, smile. This is something my father did. If he told me that story one more time. My father was he was horribly abused as a kid, and he had nothing to go on, so he just looked for great ideas. He was kind of a Willie Loman kind of guy, where he just didn't have a lot of friends, and he just worked all the time. But his friends, I found out later in life, were people like this, Norman Vincent Peale, that were just his book friends. And he would take these ideas and he would apply them. And he told me, he said, son, he said, I want you to do this. He said, I did this when I was like 18. I walked down the streets of Seattle. And he said, I walked down one side of the sidewalk, one side of the street, and I frowned at everybody. And I just kind of looked at them and just kind of dismissed them. And he said, everybody I met was a grump. He said that I crossed the street after a few blocks and I decided to smile. And everyone I met on the other side of the street greeted me with happiness. He said, so either there's a problem, you're on the wrong side of the street, or it's what you're putting out. This is Norman Vincent Peale again. Smile. Remember a person's name. Oh, that's a really hard one. Be a good listener. Encourage people to talk about themselves. Talk in terms of other people's interest. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, now listen to this. If you apply these at Thanksgiving, you are going to find a completely different atmosphere. Listen to these 12 ways to win people to your thinking. One, the only way to get the best of an argument is to avoid it. Whenever we argue with someone, no matter if we win or lose the argument, we all still lose. The other person will either feel humiliated or strengthened and will only seek to bolster their own position. We must avoid arguments whenever we can. Two, show respect for other people's opinions. Never say you're wrong. How many times have we said that? How many times have I said that? We must never tell people flat out that they are wrong. It will only serve to offend them and insult their pride. No one likes to be humiliated. We must not be so blunt. That's the word that kid used. Blunt.
Yeah,
right. Three. That was a B. Yep, three. If you're wrong, admit it quickly and emphatically. Whenever we're wrong, we should immediately admit it. Four, begin in a friendly way. If we begin our interactions with others in a friendly way, people will be more receptive. Five, start with questions to which the other person will always answer yes. That's the theory of, in my book, about the unum. Where do we agree? Where do we agree? Find the things that we agree on. Start there. Let the other person do a great deal of talking. Number seven, let the other person feel the idea is his or hers. Try to see things from the other person's point of view. Other people may often be wrong, but we cannot condemn them. We must seek to understand them. Success in dealing with people requires a sympathetic grasp on the other person's viewpoint. Nine, be sympathetic with the other person's ideas and desires. People are hungering for sympathy. They want us to recognize all that they desire and feel. If we can sympathize with others, they will appreciate our side as well, and it will often come around to our way of thinking. Now, think of that. When people say, I don't want to know what they're thinking. I don't want to because it's wrong. Well, no, no. You're looking at the solution. Listen to what they're feeling. What they're feeling is real. Their solution may be bogus, but what they're feeling, and think about you. Where is a lot of this anger coming from? This anger is coming from the place where we don't feel heard. If the media would actually listen to us, our world would be a lot different. If they reflected our point of view, and if they would look at us and say, well, that's not racist. Wait a minute. You have to understand what these people are feeling is a loss of the country that they grew up in. A loss of the values that they grew up in. And those were values that have been here for 5,000 years. They're not racist or xenophobic. They're having all of the basic principles shift under their feet. Wouldn't you be more apt to listen to somebody who understood you? Dramatize your ideas. Throw down a challenge. The thing that most motivates people is the game. Everyone desires to excel and prove their worth. If we want someone to do something, we must give them a challenge, and they will oftentimes rise to meet it. But be a leader. Don't give offense or arouse resentment. Begin with praise and honest appreciation. Call attention to people's mistakes indirectly. No one likes to make mistakes, and no one likes to have others point it out in front of other people. Talk about your own mistakes before criticizing the others. Ask a question instead of giving the direct order. Listen to this one. Let the person save face. Nothing diminishes the dignity of man quite like an insult to his pride. How many times have we said, for those people who, let's take on our own side, for those people who have been with Donald Trump the whole time, what are you doing? When you have people that are come, like for instance, me or anybody else, when you have people start to come into the tent, why would you say, well, it's about time. You were so stupid. Why would you do that? Welcome them. If you have somebody from the other side, well, you've been wrong your whole life. You know, it's part of your problem that we have these problems. Stop. They're coming into the tent. Embrace them. Hug them. Oh, man, we're glad you're here.
You see this with the Clinton thing right now is one that I struggle with because, you know.
Oh, I know.
Where was the media? Where was the left during all of these years where Bill Clinton was the same horrible person he is today? Now, finally, after Hillary's lost a couple times and the family's going, you know.
See, this. But this
being set out to pasture, it's okay.
But this is, I think, where we miss the boat. Because we immediately jump to the media and the politicians. They're not honest.
Yeah, no, it's true.
That's not who I'm talking about. Forgive the media for what they're doing? No, let's point out when they're right. Let's point out when they're wrong. And let's welcome them when they're right. You know, if that ever happens. But it's not. We're not talking about them. I'm talking about the people at your table next week. I'm talking about the neighbors. I'm talking about the people that you work with. This is about one-on-one. This is not about changing the media. This is or Washington. This is about changing the people around you.
Yeah, because we do basically the opposite of everything you just described in the from the book right now. We're doing the opposite of all of it.
Everybody does. Uh-huh. Both sides.
Uh-huh.
One side's worse than the other.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I think because I definitely handle issues on this show differently than I would handle them with
you
friends
avoid
I was
them.
Trying to convince.
No, oh, okay.
Like if
friends
I was
you're trying to convince.
You know, because we do this for a living.
Yeah.
When you go out to dinner with anyone, they basically ask you lots of political questions because, mm-hmm. you know, that's what you do. You talk mm-hmm. about the other person's work. And if the person I'm talking to is not on the same side of the issue mm-hmm. as me. I tell them
how stupid they are.
I tell them how obviously. Dumb they are. Yeah. Morons. Right. No.
What's wrong with you?
Why are you such a dumbass?
I am not reaching for the check when it comes.
Right. You try. You do almost all the things you just listed. And yes. I do those all the time. You want to, if you're trying to convince them or at least trying to make them open their mind to the possibility that maybe they're not right.
Yes.
You use those things. Now, when we're on the show, I don't do that. Now,
that's the problem.
I don't know if it's a problem or not. I'm conflicted with it because part of it is we're talking to an audience largely that understands the basic foundations of what we're talking about, right? Like this audience, generally speaking, is going to know that higher taxes are bad, mm-hmm. right? So I don't need to slow play that but try to convince them of that.
But here's where we don't do. Why was Rush Limbaugh so popular in the 90s? Because he taught you how to win an argument. Mm-hmm, okay. Mm-hmm. And he had to teach you. He wasn't talking about how to finesse it. He was just teaching you the basic principles yes. that we all have mm-hmm. that this audience understands basics, you know, the basic principles. Mm-hmm. Okay. But what we didn't do, that was back in the 90s, and that worked because nobody had any of the facts. We needed to have that baseline, and we still need to teach people baseline stuff. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, around 2000, that was over. People were condemning Rush Limbaugh, and if you said it came from Rush Limbaugh, well, you roll your eyes. Now it's Fox. Anything comes from Fox, they roll your eyes.
You used to say you didn't want to put your own names on your books. You didn't want to put Glenn Beck on the book because it was just
right.
People wouldn't take it seriously if they were on the
correct.
Left.
Correct. So what we need to do is start teaching people, and you can. Here's lesson number one. Read this book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Read it. Because it has all of the answers on how we can move forward and actually make a difference, not just politically, but also at the Thanksgiving table next week. You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
Relief Factor.
Yeah, this is we've seen a huge change in Glenn over the years because of Relief Factor, which is good for me, too. It'll help change the lives of people around the person in pain because the person in pain is less annoying.
I don't think this
that's,
is
that's
the way.
That's the slogan of Relief Factor.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's a new one. I came
you'll,
up with it.
You'll be able to tolerate the people who are in pain.
Because
that
you,
is
I,
so
always,
empathetic of you.
Thank you very
yes,
much.
Yes.
You struggled with this for a long time.
Yeah, I was at the end of my rope about a year ago, and my wife said, just try it. Just try it. Everybody at work is trying it, and I'm like, it's not going to work. It did. I took it for 3 weeks. I saw an enormous change. And I haven't stopped taking it since. And that's about what 70% of the people who try it for 3 weeks, that's about 70% of them do exactly what I did. Oh my gosh, it works. So take it. Relief Factor. Try it for 3 weeks. If it doesn't work, you know, you're out $20 in 3 weeks. If it does work, you get your life back. ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. Mr. Bill O'Reilly. It has been a pretty hectic week, but I don't know the last week that we went, really nothing happened. And I think we should start with your op-ed today, the Trump media war.
Okay, Beck, I'm ready to go.
Good, then go.
The Trump media war is, I would say, depressing to Americans who are thinking people. Because it basically signals that there's not going to be any unity in this country while President Trump is holding the office, mm-hmm. because neither side is going to back down. All right. But then I took a letter out of my historical collection by Harry Truman, which makes the column really worth reading, and I say this is nothing new. And Truman just excoriates the media and gives examples about how it was so unfair to Abraham Lincoln and George Washington and other presidents. So it really isn't new. What is new is the machines, the tweets, the hysteria on cable news, all of that is new. But, you know, it seeps into the culture and it makes us a more disagreeable population, Beck.
So let me go back, because the first paragraph of your op-ed, which is honestly the only paragraph I read.
Mr. Preparation
was about Jim Acosta.
Yeah.
So let me go here, because you're absolutely right on this has always been this way. It's just everywhere now, and it's in our own personal life, and we are participating in sharing it now. So it's everywhere. But let me specifically go to Jim Acosta, because I'm sick of this debate here. I think, and correct me, tell me where I'm wrong here. I think the president taking away Jim Acosta's pass, White House pass, is justified in this case because Jim Acosta needs somebody, should be CNN, to say, Jim, there are rules. And you can ask a follow-up question. It used to always be, sir, I have one question and I'd like a follow-up. Yes, go ahead. Then the follow-up. He would not stop asking questions. The president answered. He really tried to answer to the best of his ability and peacefully and nicely. Jim Acosta really didn't even ask a question. He was just trying to condemn the president. He was picking a fight with the president. CNN should have said, Jim, stop it. We don't behave that way. And I don't care how the president behaves. We're not going to behave that way. So the question is this a freedom of speech issue or freedom of the press issue? I don't think it is.
No, it's a quality control issue. On BillO'Reilly.com, that's where the column that you refuse to read. And Beck, you're wealthy enough to have people read it to you.
Oh, I can't pay people enough. I can't pay people enough to
follow you and read it.
Oh, they can't do it. They're like, please.
So the column's on BillO'Reilly.com. And yesterday we brought in a guy, a lawyer, a former prosecutor, who went down line by line over CNN's complaint and pointed out at least a dozen inaccuracies in the complaint to the federal judge that were flat out wrong and provable wrong. You could see it with your own eyes. And I said, well, will that influence the judge if CNN is not telling the truth about Jim Acosta and the what happened in the White House briefing room? Will that? And he said, well, it shouldn't influence the judge's ruling on the constitutional request, but it'll tee off the judge because the judge will see that CNN is lying, which they clearly were in the complaint. So that tells you that CNN has no interest.
Give me the lies, because I miss that. Okay. And that sounds like the first segment.
That's why you write BillO'Reilly.com every night.
I know. It sounds like the first segment in 3 years that I've been interested in.
Oh, come on. He's such a jealous guy.
He is, Bill. I agree with you.
Rub some of that painkiller on your forehead right now, will you? Jeez.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Uh-huh. So basically, CNN alleges in its complaint to the federal judge that Acosta simply asked a question. That's lie number one.
Yes.
Not what he did. All right. He harangued the president and insinuated that he was lying when he labeled the caravan an invasion.
Correct.
That's not a question. Mm-mm. It's an insinuation and a harangue.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows it. Nobody's going to say it isn't. Even the people at CNN wouldn't say it isn't.
No, that's.
Yet the management puts that in writing to a federal judge. Come on. It's ridiculous. So your question was, shouldn't CNN try to rein in its chief White House correspondent from disrupting a national press conference? And the answer is, CNN wants the disruption. It's the only way they're going to get in the news. Their ratings are horrible. And their business model is to destroy the Trump presidency. So, of course, they're going to say, hey, Jim, go on in. CNN's not banned from the White House. They have correspondents that cover the presidential press conference, just not Acosta, because he will not obey the rules of decorum.
Well, let me play devil's advocate, and I do not think this is what's going on, but we have to protect. I don't want a, I wouldn't want, Fox News to have, who was it? Major Garrett was really good at holding Obama's feet to the fire. Jake Tapper, when he was, I think, with ABC, he was really good at holding. They were the only two that did. And I don't
well,
want
I mean,
the
pre- you can do
hang
it.
On, hang on, just hype down for a second, man. So I don't want the president to be able to say, I don't like the fact that he asked me tough questions. What I want is they have to be respectful. And those guys were. They were always respectful of the president and the office. That's not what's happening with Jim Acosta. If he were asking questions, tough questions, he would have every right to do it. And I would celebrate and I would stand behind his right to ask the toughest questions. But that's not what he's doing.
But it's obvious it's not what he's doing. Yeah. And the White House denying him the press pass was not based on editorial content. It was based on behavior. He was misbehaving in their opinion, in the White House opinion. So now the judge has to make that determination. Has to say, was it the banishment of Acosta based on his behavior, or was in an editorial statement? And I think it's clear
now,
that it was behavior.
Bill,
so we'll see if the judge, who is a Trump appointee, comes back today and gives CNN relief. All CNN is asking for today is a restraining order against banning Acosta, not the whole decision. But what the judge will say is yes or no. You have to give him the pass back. Which
why did he ask for an extra day?
I don't know. I believe that this is obviously the judge's big moment in the spotlight, and he wants to probably go over his decision, every word of it, because he knows he's going to get hammered either way.
Yeah.
Whatever his decision is, the judge is going to get hammered. So he wants to go over a little more time and just get the wording correct. That's speculation, but that's what I would surmise.
Bill, separate from the actual court proceedings, because you said something, and I think I totally agree with it, which is CNN wants the disruption. This is the way they're making news. You know, Jim Acosta doesn't care about the truth. Jim Acosta wants to be a star. He wants to put himself and elevate himself to the level of a fight with the president of the United States. My question is, just strategically, from the Trump administration standpoint, doesn't this elevate him and put him on this platform where it's Trump versus Acosta, and it's giving Acosta everything he wants to be a martyr for the First Amendment?
Well, Trump sees it differently in the sense that Trump wants to build a wall, not only to keep out migrants on the southern border, but against criticism from the national press. And part of the wall is convincing Americans that the press will never report accurately on him.
Mm-hmm.
And look at this guy. Look at him. So the Trump administration believes that Acosta's aggression helps them by diminishing the press in general.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'll tell you what, if you look at the surveys about Americans and how they feel about the American media, they're down there in the 30s now. They don't trust them. They don't like them. So it could be something to that. So that's why Trump is doing it.
Why did Fox take the stand with CNN?
Well, that's an excellent question, Beck.
Of course it is. It came from me.
I know. A guy who doesn't read the research material before he interviews.
Oh, you know I read every word of that damn thing. I had to take no dose to get through
it. I know, Beck. This is an evaluation on the Glenn Beck radio program based upon my knowledge of what is happening at FNC. Okay. Regime change. That happened when Roger Ailes left the company.
Mm-hmm.
Now the new people are not of the same mindset of Mr. Ailes. All right, that's number one. So there has been a change, a shift. And the shift has basically been, we have to become more mainstream, not more liberal, all right, but more mainstream. We have a powerful brand. We have a loyal audience. And now we have to get closer to the other national media. That's what we want to do. That is the strategy.
That okay? won't work.
Okay. Well, maybe not.
Well, I mean, what is mainstream?
Why they did what they did.
Right. But what does mainstream mean? We want to be closer to the mainstream.
They want to be in the club.
They'll never be in the club.
Well, we celebrated when you and I were there. We celebrated the fact that we were not in the club.
Correct.
We enjoyed the maverick status.
Yes.
Which propelled Fox News to the top of the news ratings.
Right.
That attitude, like, we don't care about the corrupt media because we know they're not telling the truth. And we're happy we're not in that club. That has changed.
The day that Fox News fires their entire primetime lineup and to replace it with Shep Smith is the day they would consider allowing Fox News into the club for about 2 days.
Well, that's true. I mean, Fox News is so demonized by the far left that no matter what it does.
Yeah.
But Fox News does not want to be criticized by the Washington Post and the New York Times and CNN. So they said, okay, well, we'll throw in with the freedom of press movement, and we'll file an amicus brief, and maybe that'll send a signal that we want to be friends. We want to be friends with you guys.
Okay, so Bill O'Reilly, when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about the border and what is happening. And something I actually heard today driving in on, I don't remember what it was, some liberal podcast that I was listening to driving in, and they said, you'll notice that the left is, or the right is not even talking about the border. They don't even care about the border. They've dropped that. No, no, no. We're talking about it. We're very concerned about it. In fact, I'm wondering what the president is going to be doing about this now. So we go to the caravan and Mexico and how Mexico has provided police escorts to our border. When Bill O'Reilly comes back. Bill, some news just broke that the judge has sided with CNN.
Yeah, I see it.
Yeah. Your thoughts?
Well, you're so lucky to have me here.
I know I am.
It'll be interesting to see if the White House appeals. Because basically the judge is saying, this is Timothy J. Kelly, you can be rude, you can be disruptive, and he says it. All right? You can do whatever you want and not lose your credentials.
That doesn't make any
sense. So, okay.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Well, certainly he will be overturned, I think, by the Supreme Court. And, you know, if they appeal it to the liberal appeals court in D.C., they'll lose. But if they want to bring it to the Supreme Court, they'd win. No doubt in my mind they'd win. But the other way to handle it is say, all right, Acosta, you know, here's your press pass back, and never mention him again. Never recognize him. Never call on him. Just freeze him. So
he's
what do you do then?
That.
Then if he disrupts the press conference, if he like says, "I want my question," you haven't called on me or whatever, then you can say, "Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you soon," and walk off the stage.
He won't do
you
that.
You know, you could do that. You could do the passive aggressive thing, and just ice him. Or you could try for the big, kahuna and have the Supreme Court say, no, the government does have a right on its own property to regulate disruptive behavior,
Bill, there's nobody in their right mind. You cannot run a society. There is no civilization without being civil.
That's right, without rules.
Right. So, I mean, this doesn't make any sense at all. You cannot just act any way you want.
The Trump administration, the first thing they have to do is make some rules and distribute the rules. They don't have those now. Okay?
That's a problem.
But again, if they did, then they'd sue on that. Oh, you mean they're limiting our access to the president, limiting what we can do or we can't do. Bad ruling. What are you going to do? This is our democracy. This is the way we do it.
Okay.
So, but the Trump administration has a couple of avenues to go if they want them.
Let me go back to the border. You say that the new incoming president of Mexico says he's going to legalize all drugs. Doesn't this take the Al Capone out of the...
No. This all this does is cut the overhead for the cartel so they don't have to bribe as many Mexicans and hire as many gunmen to shoot at the police and the army.
Wait, but you don't have to shoot at the police if it's legal.
I know. That's how it cuts their overhead. So they don't have to spend that. All right? And it only goes, oh, thanks. Where do they make their money, Beck? Not Guadalajara, not Mexico City. They make their money in Chicago, New York, L.A., and all American cities.
Mm-hmm.
So it just makes it easier for them to bundle up their product and send it El Norte.
So
this is the best thing that could possibly happen to the cartels.
So what does that mean for America and our policy?
We have twice as many hard drugs here.
No, I mean our policies. Our policies. For instance, I'm done with Mexico. When they escorted those buses, they escorted the buses with federales to our border. That's not what a partner does.
They're doing that to protect the migrants.
Oh,
from,
shush!
You know, people who would beat them up and rape them.
Right.
Look, I've been done with Mexico for a long time, and I did go down there in the spring to Baja, and I did some reporting down there about how they were handling their military and dispersing them to fight the cartels. That's all gone. But now the argument for a border wall becomes even stronger. When you say, okay, so now we have a free fire zone in Mexico, they can do anything they want in hard drugs, so we got to make it harder for them to get it into America. No. And the liberals still wouldn't put the wall, because eventually they want legalized hard drugs here. You know, it's interesting. I'm watching, switching back on the TV, Fox News is ignoring the...
I know
ruling.
They are.
They're ignoring it. And CNN's doing having a limbo party. Limbo lower now. This is so funny. You know, how this whole media thing is now based on Trump. Everything, 100% of it is Trump. They don't have anything else. They're going to have to run Andy Griffith reruns if Trump, you know, takes a vacation for 2 weeks. It's they don't have anything. Go ahead,
Bill. Let me change subjects here.
Sure.
You know, I run a charity, as you run yours, and this weekend we're having an auction to raise funds, and I just wanted to bring a couple of things to your attention because I know you collect rare writings. We've formed a partnership with the Lincoln Museum in Illinois, and they're the ones who have the original Gettysburg Address. And mm-hmm. as you may know, only Abraham Lincoln made a copy of it, and there are no other copies. This we have asked them, and shockingly, they said yes, if they would make a high-res certified copy off of the original. So it's the only copy of the handwritten Gettysburg Address that we know of that is you know, up for auction and in existence. And I just wanted to bring it to your attention that, you know, the bidding.
Are they going
to
make a lot of copies or just one?
No, this is it. This is it.
Are they going to make one high-res?
This is it. I'm holding it right now. This is the only copy that they have ever made, and they will make.
I might bid on that deck.
So can I put you down for a number?
Well, what do you have now?
$3 million. That's what you have.
No, the bidding, I don't even know. Do we have a bid on this yet? Yeah, but he's going to, I got to nail him down to a price now. What do you know the number? 15,000 is the opening bid there, Bill.
You should triple that at least.
Huh?
All right, I'll go 20.
You go 20,000.
Yep.
From Mr. Bill O'Reilly.
Wow. Nice work, Bill.
What a guy.
I am a swell guy.
You really are.
You're a great guy, and you've just bought something that Glenn wrote down with a pencil a half hour before the show started.
You know, I'll frame it and put it in my garage next to a picture of Beck.
Bill O'Reilly.
A picture of Beck forging this, by the way. If you do, I'd like to have that.
All right, Bill. Thank you so much. God bless you. Thank you.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving all you guys, and check out Killing the SS. Great gift for anybody who likes history for Hanukkah, Christmas, and all of that.
It is a great book. Thank you so much, Bill. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Cheers.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.